This is Sports Talk from AM 870 WKAR.
This program content is made possible in part by WKAR listeners.
Hello and welcome to Sports Talk here on WKAR AM 870. I am Matt Ludke once again in the Iron Throne. I have Alex Sharg helping me out in the booth. And we do have quite a bit to get to today. There's some drama brewing both on the court and off in the NBA playoffs, mostly between the Denver Nuggets and Golden State Warriors. We've got some MSU football recruiting news, how the new division alignment is potentially going to affect the future recruiting efforts. The Red Wings fell short in their first game of the Stanley Cup playoffs last night to the Ducks 3-1. But before we get to all of that, we'll start out with a little local news. Tonight is the 7th annual Crosstown Showdown. It is the MSU Spartan men's baseball team going up against the Lansing Lugnuts. Now, this event, three separate occasions, has set the attendance record at the Cooley Law School Stadium, formerly Oldsmobile Park. Now, tonight looks like a great night for baseball, to say the least. Now, originally it was scheduled for April 11th, but of course it was 43 degrees and horrible outside, so they wisely decided to postpone the game, and now it's supposed to be 80 and gorgeous out. Alex, I think it's a beautiful day for baseball. It looks like it's going to be a great atmosphere tonight, as it usually is.
Yeah, it's funny because I saw something about potential May snow showers, maybe not here in Michigan, but as we saw last week and the week before that, rain was the theme that just wouldn't go away. And with MSU baseball finally getting a good week of games in, this Crosstown Showdown will finally be one to watch.
Yeah, definitely. And May snow showers in Michigan would be the opposite of a surprise. I mean, anything really goes as far as Michigan weather. I think we all know that. But yes, 7:05 tonight. Tickets, $10, still available. Go to LansingLugnuts.com. And yeah, it seems like just about every year they're going to set an attendance record. It is a 7-inning exhibition game. Wood bats tonight. It's a great experience for the young players on Michigan State side. And, you know, it's a fun time for the Lugnuts players as well. And you know, it's great for the players, at least for the Spartans, to go out and play in a nice stadium like that in a nice metropolitan area. Probably more fans than are going to, you know, normally turn out for a regular MSU baseball game. It's a great event all around. I mean, you know, I'm glad they, you know, picked a better day than the 11th turned out to be. And I think both teams are looking forward to it, and I think fans are as well. It's usually always a fun night, and tonight looks like it's going to be nothing different. So Crosstown Showdown tonight at Cooley Law School Stadium. But Alex, let's just dive into some MSU football stuff. And as far as recruiting goes, the big story with the 2014 football class, at least up to this point, has been the Drake Harris commitment, decommitment, and then eventual commitment to Michigan. Now, that's going to garner a lot of headlines because he's a top-flight player. I mean, he had 2,000 yards receiving last year. Probably the top prospect in the state going forward. But, you know, you look at the class that the Spartans are kind of putting together, and it's still early in the recruiting cycle. They've already got six commitments, three of whom are from the state of Illinois, and that includes Jack Allen's little brother, Brian Allen. We know how much we like legacies here as far as the Bulla family. And speaking of, there's another Bulla coming down the pike, Byron Bulla. So it seems like they just keep churning those kids out, and they're all stud linebackers. So, you know, keep it up, Bulla family. We're going to have another generation in 20 years, and I think we're going to have about nine guys playing Bulla. Sooner or later, we're going to be able to field an entire defense of Bullas, and I think that's probably a worthy goal. So, you know, you look at, and we have Enoch Smith Jr., a defensive lineman, who committed recently, and it looks like, as far as out-of-state recruiting, Illinois seems to be the most fertile ground for Michigan State. Now, usually they focus on Ohio, and that's, you know, one of the most talent-rich states in the country, and certainly the Midwest. But if we can start maybe making a little footprint in the Illinois-Chicago area, there's certainly talent there, too. And, you know, there's enough to go around as far as the Big Ten is concerned. So, I mean, you look at that, and then you look at the new divisional alignment in the Big Ten. Now, MSU saddled in the East with the traditional powers, as it were, U of M, Ohio State, Penn State, you know, Indiana. I don't know if they're exactly a traditional power, probably the opposite. And then the newcomers in Rutgers and Maryland. And, you know, you look at that, and what's missing is those teams from Illinois. I mean, you miss Northwestern, who's in a great location as far as, you know, recruiting efforts are concerned, just because of their proximity to Chicago, and then Illinois itself down in Champaign. But as long as, you know, the word of Jim Delaney can be taken, you know, seriously, and, you know, things change in the Big Ten, it seems like, every other week. But it seems like they're going to go with this parity-based scheduling, which has teams like Wisconsin, Iowa, and Nebraska meeting up against teams like Penn State, Ohio State, and U of M for a majority of the near future. A lot of those cross-divisional matchups will be between those schools, which leaves Michigan State with teams like Northwestern, Minnesota, who's in Minneapolis. That's another good area. So you have teams that we're going to get to play against quite a bit. And, you know, we've seen the last few years, we've finished our seasons with games against Northwestern and Minnesota. And those are, you know, recruiting grounds that the Spartans want to kind of take advantage of, because, I mean, we're going to get the exposure from the schools in the East, you know, like Rutgers and Maryland. That's a big deal. You get the Eastern Seaboard. But those other grounds, like, you know, Minneapolis and Chicago, obviously, there's lots of talent there. So, Alex, when you look at, you know, potentially, you know, a few seasons of playing teams like Northwestern and Minnesota from the other division, do you think that helps us or hurts us? Because we're not going to be playing Nebraska quite as often or Wisconsin quite as often.
Right. Now, before I comment on the parities of the divisions, I think it's important to realize the Urban Meyer effect. When Urban Meyer, before Urban Meyer came to Ohio State controlled in-state Ohio recruits. If you were an in-state Ohio recruit, Ohio State was your first option. Well, when Urban Meyer set foot at Ohio State, then they probably decided to change their strategy of controlling the in-state Ohio talent and looking to bring in more out-of-state talent to Ohio State. So when Ohio State started to look at this out-of-state talent, Michigan started to offer more out-of-state players as well, from what I've seen. I could be totally wrong on this, but from what I've seen, Michigan is starting to offer more out-of-state out-of-state players than they did in-state. And that leaves the door wide open for Michigan State to come in and take a Will Golson, to come in and compete for a Lawrence Thomas, to come in and compete for a variety of different players in state that in the past would normally flow to Michigan.
Right.
Now, what kind of effect will that have when Michigan State is looking to sway a Drake Harris? Well, it definitely hurt, because Drake Harris is a guy that had an Ohio State offer, had a Michigan offer, had a USC, had you know, these prestigious Division I schools already. So was the decommitment maybe unexpected? That's
no.
To be debated, because
I
look at what
was.
He's offered.
Yeah, I mean, you know, as soon as Ohio State started, you know, showing a little interest, I think his strong Spartan stance slowly wavered, and until, you know, of course, now it's, you know, a thing of the past totally. But to your point about, you know, Ohio State controlling the state of Ohio, at least in regards to recruiting, you know, Mark D'Antonio, obviously he was on staff with Ohio State when they won their national championship. He had a great relationship with Jim Tressel. I mean, I think he still talks about the sweater vest with, you know, the utmost regard. So, you know, you look at a guy and their relationship there, and we were able to get a lot of recruits that maybe, you know, kind of fell by the wayside for Ohio State. Guys like Javon Ringer, who was only really available because he was hurt his senior year. You know, we've gotten a lot of talent out of Ohio. You know, B.J. Cunningham, Le'Veon Bell, you know, just to name a few. You know, and I think if Urban Meyer really cracks down and you know, kind of stops that friendly relationship, which I think he has, I think he did that right off the bat when they took Shavon Pittman from us, who is no longer a Buckeye. So that was, you know, a moot point there. But still, I mean, if he's going to kind of, you know, stop any player from leaving the state of Ohio, I think maybe the rest of the Big Ten's in trouble. And you look at Michigan, and I think part of the thing that people hated about Rich Rodriguez, other than the fact that he lost several more games than he won, was the fact that he didn't recruit the state of Michigan well enough. And that kind of coincided with MSU's rise. I mean, obviously, the Rich Rod era will be removed from the Michigan history books as soon as they possibly can get them out. I don't know if there's enough whiteout to do that, but, you know, you look at that era, and that's when we started getting guys like Larry Caper and Edwin Baker. I mean, it's rare for us to get, you know, the top flight running back in the state, but it's even rarer for us to get both of them. And we had both of them that year, and they both came in and produced. I mean, Caper was the leading rusher's freshman season, Baker his sophomore season. So, you know, it's not like we weren't doing well in Michigan, you know, a few years ago. Now it seems like the tides are maybe changing a little bit. Brady Hoke seems like he can just recruit anyone he wants and they'll sign. You know, Drake Harris, you know, one of them, one of the many examples. But you know, you look at what recruiting can do in the future, and it seems like Michigan State isn't going to be able to survive on just Michigan players. They're going to have to look at other places in the Midwest. And that's why the, you know, the addition of Rutgers in Maryland is so exciting, and why maybe being in the East is a good thing. You know, granted, we have to go against Ohio State and Michigan every year just to win the division. But at the same time, you know, we're going to be playing those schools in addition to those schools out East. We're going to get, you know, some visibility out there. We're going to become maybe a bigger presence on, you know, in televisions across the Eastern Seaboard. And that only goes well for kind of upping the level of visibility for the brand. And, you know, in that comes recruiting. I mean, you know, you're going to attract more players the more visible you are. So I think that helps. I think going forward, if we can keep those strongholds maybe in the Chicago area, in the state of Illinois, and in Minneapolis, that's only going to help us even more, because now we have all these different areas to kind of scout players and take looks at guys, whereas, you know, before maybe we were just solely focusing on Michigan. And, you know, you can say, well, when we were focusing on Michigan, we were, you know, winning more games and getting better classes. But I think, you know, the landscape is certainly changing along with the landscape of the Big Ten as a whole. Listeners, let us know what you think of the divisional alignment and how recruiting is going to go moving forward. 517-355-9527. That is 355-WKAR, or toll free at 877-952-7870. And Alex, you know, you look forward to this season, and I think it's important that they, you know, perform at a high level, because, you know, after last year, I think you know, the fans especially, but, you know, just the general public is kind of waiting and seeing what Michigan State's going to do. There's a lot of hype going into last year, and I think it's safe to say that they fell short of it. You know, the defense was nationally elite, like everyone thought, but the offense wasn't able to just kind of plug guys into the system and keep chugging along at the rate it was the year before. I think people may have underestimated how awesome Kirk Cousins was and, you know, his receiving corps, but you look at this season, they've got the schedule to win, you know, at least seven games again. Hopefully they'll improve on that mark, because, of course, that seventh game came in the bowl game against TCU. But if they can, you know, put together a strong season, they already have, like I mentioned before, a good start to this recruiting class, you know, with guys like Enoch Smith Jr., Brian Allen, Deion Drake, a linebacker from Detroit, who I believe was selected for the U.S. Army High School All-America game, which happens over in, you know, late December, early January. So, you know, you have guys like that who are going to be highly visible recruits, who are going to keep trying to recruit other players from their class. You know, the advent of social media has kind of changed the way that recruits, you know, contact each other. And, you know, with all this open recruiting business, you know, you can tweet whoever you want as many times as you want, and now you see guys who commit to a school early and then kind of, you know, maybe become a little bit of a student recruiter, so to speak. You know, I know Damian Terry and John Reschke, who have, you know, come over in the 2013 class, at least, have talked a lot about trying to you know, talk to kids and get them to maybe consider Michigan State. Maybe guys who weren't going to consider the Spartans are now looking into the school, just because, you know, these high profile guys are going to Michigan State, are talking about them proudly, and are tweeting about them as much as they possibly can. So, you know, as much as Tom Izzo doesn't like Twitter, maybe in football, as far as recruiting is concerned, it is an unequivocal good thing. So with that, I think we'll wrap up the first segment, take a quick break here. Please stay tuned for the rest of Sports Talk here after a few messages on WKAR AM 870.
The president cracks jokes for the press corps.
I've got 99 problems, and now Jay-Z's one.
Congressional candidates trade barbs in the Palmetto State. Senate primaries in Massachusetts to fill the seat of former Senator John Kerry. I'm Neil Cunningham, political junkie Ken Rudin, and guest host John Donvan. Next, Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
That's Talk of the Nation coming up today at 2 p.m. right here on AM 870.
This is Scott Pohl with the weather forecast. Our high today, 78 degrees and sunny. Mostly clear with a low of 57 tonight. Tomorrow will be mostly sunny and we'll have a high of 75. On Friday, another mostly sunny day with a high of 76.
Welcome back. Sports Talk here on WKAR AM 870. We're going to continue talking about Spartan recruiting. And one of the things, you know, at least this week, that's really getting a lot of play as far as recruiting efforts are concerned is the draft. And, you know, three players drafted last weekend, Le'Veon Bell, Deion Sims, and Willie Golston. And, you know, you look at that three early entrants, they all get drafted, you know, Bell in the second round and Sims and Golston in the fourth, and that makes nine players drafted over the last two seasons, which is the best mark for MSU football since the 2000-2001 pairings, which saw 10 players get drafted. And, you know, you look at this and you look at next year, and there's even more candidates, you know, guys like Max Bulla, guys like Darquez Denard, Danikos Allen, Isaiah Lewis. You know, we've got young guys coming up, at least on defense, who are projected, you know, to be relatively high draft picks. And when you look at, you know, speaking again of raising the visibility of your brand, you know, if you have guys who are walking across that stage to shake Roger Goodell's hand on draft day, and they're from your school, I think that only bodes well. That shows kids that, hey, if you come here, you know, if you come to play linebacker here at Michigan State, you've got a good chance of going to play on Sundays. And, you know, there's really nothing, you know, maybe Nick Saban's 1,000 championship rings have to have something to argue here, but, you know, there's almost nothing better than showing people that, you know, this is a means to an end. You come here, you play football here, you get an education here, and we're going to prep you for the next level, both on the field and off. And if you can put guys into the NFL and have them produce, I mean, we've had some pretty high-profile alumni go to the NFL. I mean, Plaxico Burress, you know, gun incident notwithstanding, he did catch a Super Bowl winning touchdown. I mean, TJ Duckett had a nice career. I mean, we've put guys in the league. You know, Brian Hoyer didn't even get drafted and he's sticking around on teams. You know, Drew Stanton's sticking around with the Cardinals. So, I mean, you have guys who, even if they don't get drafted, are still, you know, making waves in the league and carving out a niche in the National Football League, which is much easier said than done. Now, Alex, when you look at this roster and you look at the defense, at least, you know, you see guys like Bulla, you see guys like Allen, you see, you know, Denard, you know, Isaiah Lewis. When you look at who has the potential to go to the next level, who do you see being drafted and who do you see being drafted the highest as far as those four guys on defense who are projected to go to the NFL?
Well, let's hear from you first.
Well, you know, you look at Bulla, and he's been the anchor of the defense. And, you know, considering we've been sixth and fourth, you know, the last few seasons in, you know, total defense in terms of the entire NCAA, you'd think that there'd be more individual achievements, more individual awards, more attention on individual players from the defense. But it seems like it's just a team unit. You know, they are Spartan dogs through and through. It's a team effort. They're all tenacious. But you look at Bulla, and he is the linchpin of the defense. He is the quarterback of the D. He's a lot like a Draymond Green in basketball, where they say he's a coach on the field. I mean, he's clearly understands the schemes. He directs everything. And I think when you look at the next level, I mean, you still need that at middle linebacker. You still need a guy who's going to bark out signals, who's going to get everyone organized and get everybody in the right spot. So I think he has a shot to be you know, a second-round pick. I don't know. I mean, maybe he might be not quite as fast as you want, but we just saw Manti Te'o. You know, we were in Manti Te'o territory at pick number 20 in the draft, according to Adam Schefter. So who knows with Bulla? I think he's a more talented player than Te'o. I mean, maybe I'm a little biased there, but I mean, I think he has a shot to be a very high draft pick.
Yeah, well, you also have to look at when they look at the potential of a quality of a draft pick, it also looks on the ceiling. How good can this guy be with the physical tools that he has? Look at Isaac Alonso that was drafted by the Lions. 2 years of football out of a BYU program. You know, they're not in the SEC. They're not in a Big Ten conference. But why would a guy like Isaac Alonso be drafted so highly with limited experience in terms of competition, maybe not as high as some of the other players, and especially as high as other defensive ends? I mean, look at the Lions draft pick at defensive end, you know, the opposite guy of Clowney. And I mean, and that's a guy who probably faced way tougher competition than maybe an Isaac Alonso faced, but yet he was slated. He was drafted in the fourth round. But in terms of Isaac Ulanza's face, Isaac Ulanza's place, it's more of his potential. It's more of the physical tools. It's more of his explosiveness, his statistics. So when you look at a guy like Bullock, can this guy have that high potential? I don't know if it's as if it's comparable to some of the other players on this team. I mean, you look at some other high potential physical tool guys on this Spartan team right now. I mean, if you're going to look at maybe, you know, a quarterback position in Maxwell, sure, he's got the physical tools of a quarterback, but can he play right now? That's still to be proven. You look at even the wide receiver. You look at some of the wide receivers right now. A lot of them, look at Tony Lippett. He's got great size for an NFL receiver, but can he play right now? No. So in terms of guys who are leading, and of course we are focusing on the defensive side of the ball, Bullock, obviously, you know, he probably has NFL size, has played to, you know, his expectations debatably thus far, but are there other guys in this defense that have the physical tools to compete in the NFL?
Yeah, I mean, look at Denard. I think, you know, people had Johnny Adams pegged as a first-round draft pick coming into this season. Obviously, he kind of, you know, the turf toe really, you know, took a nice chunk out of his draft stock. But, I mean, you know, he did end up signing with the Texans in a free agent deal. So, you know, he's still finding a place in the league. I think Darquez Denard has NFL written all over him. I mean, I've seen numerous reports of guys saying, yeah, this guy is going to get drafted. He's going to be a solid player. He was our best corner last year. I mean, over a guy like Adams, who was so highly touted coming in. And, you know, Isaiah Lewis has incredible speed. He's got good hands. He makes plays, sometimes not for the best, but, you know, we'll take the good with the bad. You know, and you look at Bulla, and I think, yeah, you're probably right. His measurables aren't going to blow you away, you know, as far as, you know, the speed numbers, I'm sure. But, you know, he's a kid who knows how to play football. And, you know, Manti Te'o ran a 4.8, and the Chargers still took him. So, you know, measurables don't mean everything. And, you know, when you talk about Ziggy Ansah, gosh, it's hard to kind of use the Lions as a staple of an organization just because, you know, they're in such tumult pretty much all the time. I mean, you know, you never know with a Lions draft pick. I mean, you know, we saw Javid Best, you know, fall by the wayside. He had great speed, you know, great, you know, look at how fast he is, look at how explosive he is, but there were those injury concerns and they came back to bite us, and it seems like that happens every time with the Lions. But at the same time, I mean, Ziggy Ansah, yeah, he's a monster, and they got to work him out at the Senior Bowl, and I think that's one of the things that really, you know, opened their eyes to what they could do with this kid. Plus, you know, I don't think there's a staff in the professional football, or in the National Football League rather, who, you know, has more confidence in being able to develop a defensive lineman. So you have a guy like Ziggy Ansah, who is basically just a ball of clay, and Jim Schwartz is just licking his chops, you know, looking at how he can mold him into a wide nine defensive end and make him a menace next to Fairley and Sue. So, you know, you look at what the Lions do, and, you know, drafting on potential, certainly, but that's it's a risky pick, because if he doesn't turn out, maybe that's Jim Schwartz's job. You know, maybe he's looking for a new position in the NFL. So, you know, you look at what Bulla can do. I think he'd be a safe pick as far as you kind of know what you're going to get. He's kind of a known quantity. He seems like a guy that maybe the Patriots would pick up. He seems like he'd be a perfect Patriot. You know, that's just me. But you look at the defense, they've got talent all around the board. The thing that I think we're all waiting for is, when are we going to get another offensive player going in the draft? Because, you know, the two playmakers from last season, they already declared and they've been drafted. You know, Bell is now a Steeler and Sims is now a Dolphin. So it's looking like, you know, you look around the offensive depth chart and you're looking for guys who could potentially make a leap to the next level and go pro, you know, maybe not early, but just at least, you know, once their eligibility is all used up. And you know, I think the one guy who really jumps off the page is Aaron Burbridge. You know, he had a nice freshman season. He was hurt coming into the year, didn't really pick up the scheme as quick as some people would have liked. But, you know, once we got to that Indiana game, you know, he kind of broke out. And, you know, towards the end of the year, he was probably the most explosive guy we had on the offensive side of the ball. And, you know, tight end is a major question mark right now. Running back is an even bigger question mark right now. I mean, we had to move Riley Bulla over to the running back slot just to, you know, get some production out of there this spring. And, you know, we're going to have the freshmen come in and they're going to definitely have a shot at the job. But, you know, as far as the offense is concerned, are we going to have a quarterback who's going to get drafted? I mean, you know, we have we've had a nice little run of QBs being drafted, whether it was Hoyer or Cousins, or Stanton before them. I mean, that's three in a row who've been in the NFL, who are currently in the NFL, and, are fighting for jobs. I mean, Kirk Cousins, obviously, he's going against Robert Griffin III, so that's a bit of an uphill battle. But, he came in when RG3 got hurt and played quite well. So, I mean, you look at what the Spartans are doing in the NFL, and, they're producing, and it seems like if the more and more we put guys in the league, again, it only raises the profile of our school and our football program in general. So I think it only bodes well. I mean, people are going to, the short-term effects of Le'Veon and Dion and William going pro early are going to hurt the Spartans, sure, because, we obviously those are three of our best players, and now they're in the National Football League. But when you look at it from just a bigger picture perspective, take a step back and don't just focus so much on this upcoming season. It seems like, yeah, maybe it can help us because, you see more Spartans in the league. I'm sure Monday Night Football will roll around and Le'Veon will have to do his little introduction and it'll say, Michigan State. That goes a long way. It goes farther than you think, especially with young kids who are the ones you're trying to recruit. So, I think it's only a good thing getting these Spartans in the NFL. Listeners, let us know what you think. 517-355-9527. That is 355-WKAR. Or toll free at 877-952-7870. All right, I think it's time, Alex. Let's discuss the Red Wings and a little NHL last night just before we get to the second break. Of course, the Red Wings lose last night 3-1 to the Anaheim Ducks. I don't know if you stayed up for it. Seemed like it wasn't exactly worth it just to stay up till 1 to see a 3-1 loss. But Teemu Selanne, 42 years old. This guy, he does not age. They're doing something right over in Finland, keeping these guys young. He scores to, put him ahead. Jonas Hiller, 21 saves. And you look at Dan Cleary, he was the lone Red Wings goal, but, it seemed like after Selanne scored that goal, it was, kind of more or less over. They score an empty netter to seal it. And, between Selanne and Saku Koivu, it seems like the Ducks can roll out an NHL 95 line because these guys are, it looks like the Red Wings in 2002 when we had like Brett Hall and everyone else who was 38 plus. I mean, they might have an AARP line, but, it's getting the job done.
Yeah, I mean, and even besides for getting the job done, I mean, if you ask me, did I catch the game? I caught the first half of it because I was partially distracted by the Chicago Minnesota game that went into that lengthy overtime that was eventually ended by a bank off goal to win it. So, in terms of this Selanne, Koivu hype over at over with the Ducks, yes, I mean. You look at some of these Red Wings players, I mean, they're up in age, too.
Oh, yeah. I mean, hockey, it's almost like baseball or something where, you can go for as long as you want. And in a lockout-shortened season, even better. I mean, fewer games. But Selanne, man, that guy, I think he's going to be able to score a goal in the NHL when he's 60. Like, you just push him out on the ice, put a stick in his hands, and let him shoot the puck. That guy will never lose it. But, it could be worse, Red Wings fans. You could be the Kings. The St. Louis LA game last night, Alex Steen scores two goals to win it. He scored one early on, and the Blues had a nice lead. And then in the last 30 seconds of the game, L.A. charges down the ice, scores a goal, top shelf goal. It was a great shot, a pretty much impossible angle. And then they go to overtime, and poor Jonathan Quick is going to want to forget about this one as quickly as possible. No pun intended. I mean, wow. Usually when goalies come out and try and play the puck when it's behind the net, and they misplay it, it's because, they fire it around the boards and someone on the opposite team, gets their body in front of it, knocks it down and gets a quick shot on goal. Or he fires it around the boards and it takes a weird carom off of, one of these mystery corners, that all NHL rinks have. But instead he just kind of sat on the puck basically. He had it behind the net. Steen kind of charged him. I don't know if he was quite ready for that. Tries to play it off the boards behind him. Steen scoops it up, kind of skates not even all the way around to the front of the net and just backhands it in to win in overtime. That is, I think that's the definition of heartbreak, especially considering that Quick had 40 saves. So it's clearly like he was one of the only reasons they were even in that position to begin with. And then to blow it in such horrific fashion, that is, you know, that's the definition of heartbreaker in the NHL. So, you know, you look, Red Wings fans, yeah, I mean, they lose game one. You know, it's going to be a long series. You know, the Ducks always play us tough, and you know, we shouldn't expect anything less. They're the two seed for a reason. I mean, we were talking yesterday about, you know, momentum being really everything in hockey. Well, so much for that. It's out the window. But, I mean, you know, it's only one game. You know, as long as we steal one at their place, it seems like, you know, we get home ice back. And, you know, in both the NHL and the NBA, you know, playoff series don't really start until the road team wins. So, you know, if they hold serve at home, hopefully the Red Wings can hold serve in the Joe. Now, Alex, looking forward in this series, do you see the Red Wings being able to kind of take control back in the series, or do you see the Ducks kind of rolling over us?
Right. Well, I'm looking at the statistics from last night's game, and I'm looking at the shots. The Ducks outshot the Red Wings, which, to my opinion, for only receiving one goal against Hiller, I would assume that the Red Wings put up a lot of shots. I mean, you look at when Mike Babcock was coaching the Ducks, you know, back when we faced them years ago. I mean, this was a Ducks team that, you know, the Red Wings put up tons of shots game in and game out.
Back but they in were the right, Jean right. Sebastian Giguere days, those terrible, terrible series. Yeah, I mean, keep going.
Yeah, I mean, this was a Red Wing team that put many shots on net, was unable to not only score goals, but was unable to basically match up against Babcock's strategy in that pressure that he put against Detroit. But you compare it to this series against the Ducks, this is a completely different layout of a team, you know, many of the same pieces. But is this a team that can come back and maybe outshoot the Ducks? Yes, the Red Wings obviously can outshoot them. You know, they've been in these situations before. This is that same group that have played the last 4 or 5 years together in the playoffs. So do they have what it takes? I think the pieces are there. They finally have a consistent goaltender in net. Are they missing some pieces on defense? Yes. That's something that cannot be avoided. You did lose Lidstrom.
I was just going to say.
So, but yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, none of us know if they actually are going to do it, but I think they definitely can.
Yeah, and I mean, hockey is so up in the air anyway, and yeah, that's a good point. It's, you know, obviously you're going to have a hole when the best defenseman of the last 20 years retires, you know, and he was the kind of the cornerstone of your franchise. So, you know, you do miss a little bit of that backline support with a guy like Lidstrom hanging him up. But yeah, they certainly have the talent to do it, and, you know, I think you made an excellent point. We've seen it before where the Red Wings would, you know, they would outshoot teams like 42-15 and lose 2-1. I mean, I can't remember how many box scores I've seen with those kinds of numbers. So I think it can be done. Even if we don't generate the same quantity of chances, it's really about the quality. I mean, you can get three great looks at the net, score three goals, and then have your goalie just, you know, stand on his head and stop, you know, 50 shots. I mean, you know, little breaks matter, and, you know, lucky shots, lucky bounces, so to speak, matter. So, you know, when you look at it, it seems like, yeah, the Red Wings can certainly catch a break or two here. And yeah, all it takes is one goal and one real game to kind of turn the series on its head and sort of change the outlook, so to speak. So, you know, I think as long as they give a good effort in game two, you know, if they can manage to kind of steal home ice, I think we might be sitting pretty. But if not, you know, they're going to have to, you know, a lot of pressure goes on them for game three. So, you know, that remains to be seen if they can get it done on the road. And, you know, these 10:30 starts, they're rough on me as a fan. I'm sure they're rough on the players, you know, getting out there and having the time change. But, you know, that's been a staple of Red Wing hockey for the last 20 years. I mean, we go to the playoffs, we're in the Western Conference. Chances are good we're going to be playing out on the West Coast for those 10:30 starts. So, you know, you look at the series and, you know, as it always is with hockey, it's totally up in the air and could go either way. So, you know, we'll keep our eyes on that. With that, I think we'll take a quick break here. Stay tuned for more sports talk here on WKAR 870 after a few messages.
Mm-hmm. On the next Fresh Air, evidence that some criminals may have biochemical or neurological irregularities that make them more prone to commit violent crime. We talk with criminologist and psychiatrist Adrian Raine, the first researcher to do brain imaging studies of murderers. His new book is called The Anatomy of Violence, The Biological Roots of Crime. Join us.
That's Fresh Air coming up today at 3 p.m. right here on AM 870 WKAR Radio.
The forecast is for a sunny day with a high of 78 degrees today. It'll be mostly clear for the overnight hours. Look for a low of 57 tonight. Tomorrow, mostly sunny and a high of 75. Mostly sunny with a high in the mid-70s on Friday. I'm Scott Pohl.
All right, welcome back. Sports Talk here at WKAR AM 870, and it looks like we have a caller on the line. Ray, line one, go right ahead.
Hey, buddy, how you doing?
Pretty good. How are you?
Yeah, I had a couple questions about you, about the Big Ten football coming up.
All right, lay them on me.
Those conferences, breaking them up, what conference is Michigan in?
What conference or what division?
Well, yeah, what division? Tell me the breakdown on those, would you?
All right, so the East, you're going to have Michigan, Michigan State, Ohio State, Penn State, Indiana, Maryland, and Rutgers.
In the one conference?
Yep, in the one division.
That seems like the tough conference right there.
Yeah, that's pretty much the general consensus.
Well, how many years before this starts?
That'll be 2014.
That would be after this year.
After this year. This is the last year of the legends and leaders.
The other breakdown?
The other breakdown for the West. All right, let's see. We have Wisconsin, Purdue, Minnesota, Illinois, Iowa, Nebraska, and Northwestern, I believe.
That's the easiest conference by far.
I mean, that's kind of what people are saying. And, you know, maybe the big loser here is Nebraska, because I don't know if they were, you know, they leave the Big 12 North, which was, you know, kind of a second-tier division back in the days of the Big 12 when they had Oklahoma and Texas in the
right,
South.
Right.
And, you know, and now they're moving over to the Big 10 so they can be in the Big 10 West and they can play Iowa and Minnesota every year.
Okay.
I think that goes, that's kind of why Jim Delaney announced that parity-based scheduling, so that, you know, Nebraska is going to go across into the other division and play teams like Penn State and Michigan and Ohio State on a more consistent basis than the other schools of that division.
You think Penn State's coming back now?
You know, I think that it's going to get a lot worse before it gets better. As good of a coach as Bill O'Brien is, you know, those scholarship limitations are really going to hurt him.
How many more years they got to do that?
I believe it's three after, you know,
wow.
Last year was the first year.
How many they lose every year?
I think they go down to like, I think they lose 15 or 20. I'm not 100% sure.
Scandal.
Yep.
Wow, I didn't realize they got them that hard.
Oh, yeah, the NCAA certainly dropped the hammer on Penn State.
Oh, yeah, then they may be pretty weak for a while.
Exactly.
What is the breakdown? We all the spring games are in. I don't go to Michigan's anymore. I don't like them anymore. But what is the consensus? Who's the favorites in the Big Ten this year?
Well, I think, you know, the discussion kind of starts and ends with Ohio State. You know, they went 12-0 last year.
Right.
They weren't eligible to play in the bowl game. But at the same time, you know, it's tough to go undefeated 2 years in a row. I mean, it's tough to go undefeated 1 year, but no, to do it 2 years in a row is certainly a tall task.
Right.
But it looks like they're probably the most talented team. And when you have a coach like Urban Meyer, who is,
who do you have like the second or third favorite? Is Michigan State going to have more talent than Michigan this year?
Well, not according to the recruiting analysts.
Oh, okay. What do they got to break down?
Well, most people have, you know, Michigan and Nebraska as the 1-2 as far as the legends division is concerned. But you know, Michigan State,
Michigan the favorite. I thought they lost two of their top players, didn't they? Then they have a guy get hurt with ACL, you and all that stuff.
Yep, they lost Jake Ryan,
but
who was
they're still going to favor Michigan even though they lost five games last year.
Yeah, they sure are. You know,
I hate to hear that.
Well, you know, that's kind of I think it's better to be you know, rated highly at the end of the year than before the season even starts. So
how about,
you know,
State, how, where they got them picked?
You know, somewhere in the middle of the division. You know,
okay,
obviously people are giving us credit for the defense, but obviously a lot of question marks on offense, especially after last year.
Michigan State has got, who are the other teams in that division? Michigan State, Nebraska, Michigan, who else?
I believe it's Northwestern, Minnesota, and Iowa.
Yeah, and are any of those teams picked to have a lot of talent back or whatever?
Well, you know, Iowa's kind of trending downward. You know, they struggled last year. Of course, they did beat Michigan State, but that was a pretty ugly game. You know, they might be on the way down a little bit. You know, Wisconsin over in the leaders, they're obviously going to be there. Granted, they have a new coach because, you know, Brett Bielema hightailed it down to Arkansas.
Right.
So they might have, you know, this might be a make or break thing for them. And you know, it might be make or break for the Big Ten West, too, because they're really counting on Wisconsin to kind of maintain this momentum. You know, they've won three straight Big Ten titles. They're certainly a force to be reckoned with right now. But, you know, we'll see if that continues going forward, because if it doesn't, you know, it might turn into to that Big 12 you know, North Division, you know, as far as the Big Ten West is concerned.
Do you think there are any teams in the top 10 nationally in the Big Ten at all?
Ohio State, you know, they are right there. You know, they're in the top five pretty much wherever you look. And, you know, as much as I know you're going to hate this, I think Michigan is usually rated somewhere near the top 10, top 15 region.
Well, they always get a top 10 recruiting class every year.
Right. I mean, and that was no different during the Rich Rod era. And then they would go out and win three games. So, you know,
that's what we hope to see, don't we, buddy?
Every year. So,
yeah,
you know.
God bless you, buddy.
Yep, you have a great day. Thank you for your call, Ray.
Bye-bye.
All right. So, you know, with that, I think we'll change gears again. You know, let's go to the NBA, because there was some serious drama, and I want to get to it. And most of it involves the Golden State Warriors and the Denver Nuggets. And that's been the most entertaining series, I would say, so far. You know, being that they have Stephen Curry on the Warriors, he's one of the most exciting players in the league to watch. I mean, he had 20 points in about 4 minutes the other night. Last night, Denver wins 107-100. The series is now 3-2 Golden State, but most of the interesting you know, stuff came after the game at the press conference. Now, Golden State coach Mark Jackson, who you may remember as, you know, a former Knick player back in the, you know, late 80s, early 90s, you know, he's coaching the Warriors now, and he said in his press conference, they tried to send hitmen at Steph Curry. He said some dirty plays were being made, and speaking about the Nuggets forward Kenneth Faried, he said, you know, he was setting some good screens, but some illegal screens. And it seems like, you know, this is classic coach speak. You know, you're in a playoff series against a tough opponent, and it seems like he's just trying to protect his player. You looked at some of the plays, and, you know, they didn't really look all that dirty. Certainly chippy. You could definitely qualify them as chippy. And, you know, with a player like Curry, who has an injury history with his ankle, you know, anything that might be perceived as a shot towards his ankle is certainly going to draw the ire, you know, from his teammates towards the other team. And, you know, Mark Jackson is dropping names like Dale Davis and Charles Oakley, guys he used to play with, you know, who used to be those type of enforcer players, you know, guys who would go in to you know, rough up the other team. And it's not so much that they're just trying to play rough, you know, there's a point to it. You know, you try and get the opposition out of their comfort zone, you know, try and rile them up, maybe make them think, you know, they're thinking more about, you know, the cheap shots that they're allegedly taking, or that they're perceiving that they're taking, instead of, you know, focusing on the game itself. And, you know, you look at the results last night, and it certainly worked. Curry went 1-for-7 on three-pointers. You know, he only had 15 points. You know, he had 18 three-pointers in the four games previously. He went 1-for-7 last night. So, you know, if there's one thing about, you know, bringing physicality to get the other team out of their comfort zone, I think the Nuggets certainly accomplished that. And, you know, this whole series has been about how well Golden State has shot the ball. I mean, game two, they shot about 105% from the field. You know, actually, it was more like, you know, 65, but in NBA terms, 65% shooting for an entire team is pretty insane. It was the highest number in like 20 years in the playoffs. So, you know, they've been hitting everything. And, you know, for Denver, you know, you're looking for answers on defense, and maybe this is it. Maybe, you know, you start, you know, throw your elbow out a little more, you know, play a little rougher, get that shoulder into your man. And, you know, Faried actually shot back that the Warriors might have been, you know, playing dirty. And Andre Iguodala, the swingman for the Nuggets, said that Golden State brought the physicality, and now we're just matching it and pushing back. He also said, you know, if we're going to be playing dirty, you know, I don't condone that. I don't, you know, he obviously didn't think that his team was playing dirty. I don't know what player would admit to that unless, you know, Dennis Rodman starts suiting him up again. But, you know, you look at what they were doing last night, and yeah, it was a little chippy, but I don't think it was anything over the line. You know, that's just tough basketball. You know, maybe it's just because, you know, I've watched so much, you know, Tom Izzo, you know, and Tom Izzo coach teams that, you know, I appreciate the toughness. And, you know, Draymond Green, you know, one of Tom Izzo's top, you know, projects and you know, proteges, and he put him in the NBA here. You look at Draymond Green, and George Karl actually said, did Draymond Green, you know, he fired back with a little quip, said, did Draymond Green play football or basketball at Michigan State? And yeah, I mean, Draymond, he's picked up technical, and, you know, he's always in the middle of everything because, you know, he's one of those type of players. He's a glue guy. He's a role player, and he knows it. And, you know, of the Warriors, you know, it's really just him and Bogut as far as, you know, quote-unquote enforcers, you know, guys who can mix it up a little bit, throw their weight around. You know, they lost David Lee in game one. He was one of their big, you know, physical players. You know, they lose him, so now they're kind of looking to Draymond, and he's stepping up. You know, he had a great game in game four, not so much last night. He struggled along with, you know, pretty much the entire Warriors team. But, you know, you look at what he can do, and he's going to be asked to do that. He's going to be asked to mix it up. He's going to be asked to stick up for his guys, like a Stephen Curry. If your star player is getting a little extracurricular attention from the other team, obviously you're going to, you know, send your guys out to protect him. And Draymond is, you know, one of the frontline guys as far as that's concerned. And, you know, Mark Jackson saying all this, you know, trying to set the stage for game six, you know, maybe buy his team a few extra whistles as far as the refs are concerned. And, you know, you look at what's happening in these NBA playoffs, and, you know, maybe looking out for his players is even more important than ever, because, you know, the injury to Russell Westbrook, which has kind of certainly hampered the Oklahoma City Thunder's chances of, you know, advancing to the finals and potentially, you know, trying to beat the Heat or whoever comes out of the Eastern Conference. But, you know, let's be real, it's going to be the Heat. So, you know, you look at Russell Westbrook, and then, you know, in addition to that, the other game last night between the Los Angeles Clippers and the Memphis Grizzlies, a 103-93 Grizzlies win. And Blake Griffin, you know, came down with an injury. You know, Monday in practice, he rolled his ankle on another player, a high ankle sprain. And, you know, he only played 20 minutes, had 4 points, 5 rebounds, and 5 assists. Clearly not himself. And, you know, with him out of the lineup, it seemed like the Grizzlies just devoured the Clippers inside. I mean, it was all Zach Randolph, you know, the former Michigan State product, 25-11 last night. He led the charge. Gasol had 21-8. So you look at what the Grizzlies were able to do, capitalizing on that injury, and it seems like, you know, it's something that you never like to see, you know, with teams in the playoffs losing key players to injury. You just can't have it. You never like to see it, and it changes the outlook of the playoffs. It changes the dynamics of, you know, the entire conference. I mean, you have to know that 4-5 matchup in the West, they're just salivating, trying to get to that Oklahoma City team, knowing that instead of having to stop Westbrook and Durant, it's just Durant. And as great a player as he is, you know, he's not going to be able to do it himself. And when you have a guy like Russ as your, you know, number two, or I guess it would be, you know, 1B with Durant being 1A, you know, that significantly hampers what you're able to do both offensively and defensively. So, you know, we'll see how that plays out. But as far as that Warriors-Nuggets series is concerned, I mean, keep your eyes on it. You know, people had it going 6 or 7 games. It looks like it's going to end up there. Certainly the Memphis Clippers series could end up there too, 6 or 7 games. Obviously it's going to go 6. I had Memphis winning. I still think they're going to win, especially with that Griffin injury. But, you know, as far as pure watchability, Golden State Denver, there's not a lot like it. It's high-level basketball, and it's really fun to watch, especially if Curry and the Warriors get going and start hitting all their shots like they were in the past few games. Now, one more thing here quickly. And Alex, I do want to get you in on this. It was reported today that the Redskins name, there's been a suggestion to replace the Redskins with the Red Tails. Now, you know, if that name sounds familiar, of course, it refers to the Tuskegee Airmen. And, you know, even more recently, that you know, somewhat terrible-looking George Lucas movie, you know, Red Tails. So that's a potential name change. And, you know, this has been an ongoing fight for years and years and years as far as the Redskins name and whether it's offensive or not. Well, it is offensive, but whether it should be, you know, continue. You know, should the Redskins continue to be the Redskins or should they seek a name change? I mean, we've seen, you know, other teams have to change just because of, you know, different groups, you know, of raising valid points about, you know, past connotations with that word. So you have the Red Tails being presented as a possible change. Now, you know, the last time that they're currently actually, the Redskins are currently being challenged before the Trademark Trial and Appeal Council. So, you know, you look at that, these cases take forever. You know, people are saying it'll take at least a year to see if they can keep that trademark. And if they don't, the big thing is money. And what a surprise. The root of everything in sports is money. If they lose that trademark, it severely hampers their marketing strategy and how they're able to market their products. So, you know, maybe you would see a change then. Maybe that would, you know, kind of push owner Dan Snyder to maybe make a change and you know, change the course of the franchise and at least the name. But the last time the Redskins were in front of that board was 1992, and you know it only took 17 years for the you know for that council to come to a decision. So a 17-year case. So you know certainly we're in for a long, slow battle. But Alex, you know when you look at what the Redskins are looking at, do you see them potentially changing their name, or do you you know see them just kind of going forward as the Redskins? Remaining the Redskins. And you know, callers, let us know what you think. Should the Redskins change their name, and do you like potentially the name Red Tails? I mean, there's been other suggestions before that, and I'm certain there will be more after, but you know, you look at Red Tails, is it a potential name? 517-355-9527 or toll free at 877-952-7870. So Alex, you know, what are you thinking? Do you see the Redskins changing course and becoming the Red Tails, or do you see you know, do you see them sticking to their guns, so to speak, and staying the Redskins? Alex, all right, one more time. Redskins, do you see them changing their name to the Red Tails, or do you see them remaining the Redskins?
Well, the thing is that when you look at the Red Tails and you look at the history behind it, Redskins, is that offensive? If you have five guys protesting this name, would that be enough to do it? Probably not. You probably need a petition. You probably need, you know, a majority of people behind it. But if you have this Red Tail name and you change the name, I think there'd be a pretty big loss in fan support. I mean, it's the Redskin logo. It's the Redskins. It's that Redskin name that attracts a certain group of fans with it. I mean, what do you think?
Well, I mean, we've seen teams change names before. It seems like the NBA does it every other year. I mean, Charlotte can't decide what they want to be called, and neither can New Orleans. And certainly, I think there'd be a fuss put up from the Redskins faithful. But at the same time, I mean, if it's offensive, it's offensive. And, you know, we're moving in this, you know, kind of politically correct direction. I mean, we're already there, so to speak. But, you know, I think we're getting even more and more into that kind of area. So, yeah, I could see them changing it. Whether or not it's Red Tails, I don't know. I mean, certainly it has, you know, the historical context to it. But at the same time, I don't know if that's the direction they're going to go. So, you know, it could go either way. And, you know, at the end of the day, it really is going to come down to money. I think that Trademark Trial and Appeal Council is going to have a lot to do with it, because if, you know, if they lose a significant chunk of their marketing profits because they can't advertise themselves as the Redskins anymore, you know, things are going to go downhill for the Redskins name and logo. That about wraps up our show. Thanks for everyone for listening. You know, I'm Matt Ludke. I've got Alex Sharg in the booth helping me out. Thank you so much, Alex. And, you know, stay tuned for more NPR stuff. We've got 105 tomorrow. We will be back. You have been listening to WKAR East Lansing AM 870. Go have yourself a safe and pleasant evening, and we'll be hearing from you tomorrow.
from NPR.
This is Sports Talk from AM 870 WKAR.